The Digital Lifestyle presents TDL Mobile, show number 93 for Thursday, November 3rd, 2011. I'm Jose Ortiz.
I'm John Dickinson.
I'm Jason Coombs.
And I'm Sheldon Whitney.
So, Jace, seriously.
Limey.
What the hell? Okay. Yeah, I'm not even going to wait. Okay, so apparently after last week's show, Jace actually went ahead and made a purchase, and he didn't even have to say what it was. He just tweeted out, "Okay, hell has frozen over," or something to that effect. And I think all of us pretty much immediately, you know, figured out and assumed that he bought an iPad, which he did. Now, Jace lost geek cred at this point, because Jace did not open the box. He let it sit there, and then he said, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to think about whether or not I want this. And then the next day, you went and returned the darn thing.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Explain yourself.
Can we have logic there, please?
Yeah, okay. So, so as we, I think we mentioned at the end of last week's show, it was my 40th birthday last week, and I'd got, so my family knew that I was desperate to get a tablet. So everyone kind of had a whip round. Instead of getting loads of presents, they all kind of clubbed together and gave me a pot of money that I could put towards a tablet. So I think I put a tweet out there and said, you know, anyone got good suggestions for a tablet, you know, £400 that's not an iPad? And pretty much the resounding response was, you've got to get an iPad. Just, you've got to. And I've said before, you know, I'm not into the whole Apple thing, but the iPad is clearly the best. You know, it's like their iPhone, it changed the tablet market. So I thought about it all day, and I thought, okay, I'll take the plunge. You know, it purely was not an Apple thing for me at all. It was purely about trying to get the best that I could get for the money. And obviously, the 16 gigabyte iPad is £400 in the UK. So I went across to a local Tesco's, which is a big supermarket in the UK, and purchased the iPad. But as I'm walking away, I said, what happens if I change my mind? They said, well, as long as you haven't opened it, you can bring it back. It's exempt from our 10-day cooling off period. You cannot open the box if you want to return it. So I took it home, and normally when I get a new gadget, I just can't wait to get it out of the box. And I just didn't have that feeling with the iPad. I put it on the kitchen side and left it in the morning. I still really wasn't. I just wasn't.
No. Let me stop you there.
Okay.
Isn't the fact that you were excited kind of a tip off that? I mean, that kind of goes with the whole anti-Apple thing, right?
No, it wasn't. I just kept thinking about it, because all my music is in Windows Media Audio format. Although primarily for watching telly, we use Sky, but we still use Media Center for recording shows. And if I'm playing on the Xbox, my wife will use the laptop for watching Media Center, and it's kind of a work laptop, so it's a bit iffy that she uses it for that, but, you know, it's fine. So I just really wasn't that eager, and the problem was that this was a one-off purchase for me. Opportunity wasn't going to come again, and I just was so worried about spending £400 on a device that I ended up regretting. And I would have loved to have opened the box. I would have dearly loved to have opened the box and really had a play with it. But when you're looking at £400, which for me is a big amount of money, I just couldn't afford to take that risk. And so I just decided that I would get something that I knew I was going to get to use, I knew I was going to absolutely love. And although it wouldn't be the final product, it would, you know, definitely suit me better. And the moment I got that, I just couldn't wait to get in the box, and I haven't put it down since.
Okay, so before we get to that, because we don't even know what you got at this point, I can make an educated guess, but we still don't know. But before we get to that, now you said that you wanted to get something that you absolutely knew you would love, right? But how do you know you wouldn't have loved the iPad when you haven't really given it a shot?
I'm not disagreeing with you. Like I say, it purely came down to the fact that if I'd have opened the box, I couldn't take it back, and I just couldn't afford to make that mistake. I needed to be sure that whatever I got, I was absolutely going to be able to use, that it would fit in with the rest of our household, that other people would be able to use it. So it really did, it really kind of made it for me. And like I say, I absolutely can't say this enough. It was not about it being an Apple thing. It was totally not an Apple thing for me. I was quite prepared to take the plunge and probably, absolutely. If I'd been able to use it and still return it, then absolutely I would have been into that box and really had a play with it. But I just started thinking about all the apps I'd have to buy or search around to find, and like I said, I'd have to convert on my music, and I won't necessarily be able to use it very easily for working with Media Center, although I know it's possible, but again, you're having to look at installing extra apps on the Media Center PC and installing converters and just really.
So you were looking for a tablet that allowed you to have access to already existing media, whether it's your recorded TV from Media Center or your music library. That was one of the primary.
That was a big deciding factor. The other thing was that I knew when some technology comes out next year that I'm really excited about and want to write about on the digital lifestyle and want to try, that when I read about other people trying that technology and that software, I would have absolutely regretted the decision. Regardless of how brilliant the iPad is, I would have wanted something that I could have in the house to try that out.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds like, because I'll be honest, I don't use my iPad for media consumption, really. I just use it for more of the social aspect of it, maybe some games. I love the Amazon app on the iPad. I think most of my Amazon shopping is done through the iPad. So for me, media and Record TV and Media Center integration was never really a big deal, and it still isn't. So I can definitely understand, especially if you're already in a certain ecosystem. You mentioned you have your music in WMA, and tis for using a closed.
I know. Well, that was we ripped our music years ago before I even thought about. You know, it was the time when, you know, MP3, and you know, there was only really Windows Media Players,
right.
And it really didn't matter that it was in MP3. And I think at the time, maybe MP3 was a lower quality, but I'm not sure. That might have just been what you could get online. But yeah, I also initially made a mistake of leaving the protect your content switched on. Right. So it was all a bit of a disaster, really. But
being the case, I can understand how you would be discouraged from the iPad simply because, yeah, I mean, you're already set up in a certain ecosystem, and having to integrate that it can be difficult and more of a headache than sometimes it's worth.
I tell you what else I did do. I did go along to a store and had a play around with the Motorola Android tablet and also...
I'm sorry.
I can't remember what the Motorola one is now.
The Zoom?
The Zoom, yes, I think it was.
I'm sorry.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry that you had to experience that.
Oh, I know. Yes, that again just didn't excite me at all. But so what I ended up getting after returning the iPad was the Acer Iconia Tab W500. And the first thing I did when I got hold of it was to wipe it clean and stick Windows 8 on it. And it is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And I know for me that it was the right choice.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's still obviously, you know, Windows 8 is still in preview stage, so there isn't any of the immersive apps and whatnot, but just, you know, using the touch screen and flicking around Windows. Unfortunately, the one limitation with the Iconia Tab is that it won't be a big enough resolution to do the side-by-side applications, but it is sufficiently big enough to run the immersive apps. It's got HDMI, it supports full 1080p output, and so far it's a AMD Fusion processor, 32 gig SSD, which is double the size I would have had on the iPad, which I know isn't necessarily a big designing factor, but I know from filling my phone up that, you know, you, once you start copying content on it to take around with you, that can become a deciding factor. And I have to say, Windows 8 boots in like 3 seconds, 3 or 4 seconds. So, I mean, I can turn the thing off and literally just have it back up and running in moments.
So, why don't you describe to us the Windows experience? Because, I mean, I haven't really had any experience with it. I actually haven't really been paying attention to it simply because it was disappointing to me that it was going to be Windows 8 is the, you know, tablet OS supposed to. And we've had those discussions before about scaling a full OS down versus building something from scratch. But what's different about Windows 8 on a tablet that we haven't already seen with other Windows tablets?
Well, the I mean, I'd already tried Windows 8 out on my laptop in a dual boot. So I already knew I liked the experience, but obviously it's designed really, you know, to really experience it properly, you need a touch device. So Windows 8, where Windows has failed before, is they've always tried to put the desktop operating system onto a small touch screen, which just the icons, you know, trying to use it with a finger, particularly when you need to drill down into control panel or using applications. It's just a nightmare. Just think almost as bad as trying to use Windows Mobile. You know, it's a really awful experience. But what Windows 8 does is it adds, it's kind of a dual personality. You can drill down into the desktop, you can plug a keyboard and a mouse in, and like I say, this has got HDMI output, so you could plug it into a big monitor. The Acer supports a keyboard dock, which unfortunately I couldn't stretch to. It added about another £100 onto the price, but I might well look at picking up one of those. But the new start screen on the Icono is just so smooth. You know, scrolling around, you've got, albeit only really very simple apps for now, based on, you know, CSS, JavaScript, and HTML5. But you know, like there's a simple Twitter app, simple weather app, a simple RSS feeds app. But they're all just built touch first. And although I have experienced both, it works just as well with a mouse and keyboard. It's, you know, it's clearly a nice interface to use with touch. It just works really, really well. And the Iconia really shows it off. I mean, it is, you know, it's just I guess the AMD Fusion is the equivalent of the Intel Atom, really. But I haven't noticed any slowdown. So, it's just really trying to changes Windows that you've got this big experience that you can touch with thumbs and fingers, and you can set the keyboard into a mode so it's split 50-50 on each side of the screen, and you know, you can literally hold the tablet in the palm of your hands and then use your thumbs to type. It's just for me, it's got the same level of thought into it as Windows Phone. You know, all the live tiles and the tiled interface is all very natural to me, having come from Windows Phone. There's clearly some lessons learned in there. The only limiting factor is that the build that's available to download isn't the one that was demonstrated at the build conference. So there's some missing features, some missing apps, but I just kind of roughly, I guess we expect the beta around February, around CES next year. And like I said, I just knew if I'd had the iPad, wouldn't matter how much I love the iPad, I would have regretted it. That's what I, you know, this, you guys know Windows and Windows phones, what, you know, excites me. And that's what I want to write about on TDL. So it's just really nice to have a device. And, you know, although this build of Windows 8 hasn't got Media Center in it, we can still plug it into the home group and connect it up to the home server and watch recorded TV on it. Eventually, when there's a build of Windows 8 with Media Center on it, it'll integrate, and you know, people will be able to sit with it and just watch telly through it, and it's just a really nice experience.
I have to say that's definitely one of the pieces that hopeful of Windows 8. Although I carefully tread that line of hope because I know it's going to be unlikely, but I've always had this idea, you know, ever since the iPad of this app that integrates with Media Center, and it's a Media Center remote control, right? But not through IR, not through traditional, and I don't mind having to install a little server piece on my HTPC or even the server. But I was thinking, you know, with Windows built into it, you know, with a Windows 8 tablet, let's say I have a Windows 8 HC PC, have this remote interface where I can scroll through the guide on the tablet and select a show or select the channel or select a, you know, any recorded TV that I have, and it starts playing on whatever HCPC that I'm connected to. And I don't mean through DLNA, through streaming or anything like that, but the fact that I'm really able to use the tablet as a remote and, you know, scroll through the guide with my finger, and the guide is displayed in the same manner that it's displayed on a 10-foot UI. And if that gets built in somehow to Windows 8 and Windows 8 tablets, that would be amazing. Like I said, though, I mean, I know it's probably not going to happen, but that would be pretty cool. That would definitely sway me over, because that was the main driving factor for me purchasing the Sony Tablet S, which I've actually been pretty happy with now that I've had it for about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks now, is the fact that it has a built-in IR emitter and I can program it and use it as a remote as well. It also has a DLNA app, so I can throw it to any DLNA devices. I have quite a few Sony wireless speakers. Obviously I have my Sony TV, so I can kind of throw that media around in anywhere I want and all within the tablet. Plus I bought the dock for the tablet, so when you dock it, it turns into a clock. So I have it as like my radio alarm clock also. So it's actually been pretty useful, but for some reason I still gravitate towards my iPad. I haven't been able to abandon the iPad, even though the tablet S has been, you know, a lot more useful in terms of the actual purpose of it, and the actual use case for it. For some reason, I keep going back to the iPad for the smallest things. Like I said, maybe, you know, for like the Amazon app or even like the eBay app, or Words with Friends or Twitter. You know, Twitter on the iPad is tons, you know, way better than what's available for Android. And I see myself doing the same thing with, let's say, a Windows 8 tablet. I see the Windows 8 tablet becoming way too productive for me to want to use regularly, right? What I like about the iPad and even the Tablet S is that I know I'm not going to be, you know, trying to be productive and get work done and stuff. And it's definitely more of a leisure device. And I'd rather keep it separated, keep, you know, the leisure and the business aspect separated rather than be compelled and, you know, watching media and like, oh, you know what, let me work on the spreadsheet while I'm at it.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's what I've ended up with. And like I said, I'm just really, really happy with it. And I've included a link to a review that John did, because John on the Digital Lifestyle also bought the W500, which kind of helped me actually. Ian's video of it running Windows 8 kind of really helped make up my decision as well. And so far it's been a really good experience. So, and like I said, the performance on the Ocona is great. I mean, it's got 2 gig of RAM. The only thing I would say is they kind of push you into the keyboard, because the USB ports are all on the bottom side of the device. So even if you were to buy a sleeve for it that enabled you to stand it up, you wouldn't be able to plug a USB keyboard into it. But I might see if I can pick up maybe a Bluetooth keyboard or something.
All right. Well, although I think we're disappointed that you actually returned the device without opening it, I think we're looking forward to hearing your thoughts on Windows 8 as we move forward and as Windows 8 evolves into a final product.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, honestly, in absolute all honesty, if I could have opened the box and still returned it, I would have done. I would, you know, if somebody wants to loan me an iPad, I will give it a genuine once over and really try out. And maybe I'll come to regret my decision. But no, £400 is just too much to risk on a bad decision. So
you could just, you know, you could have tried it out and just taken a hit on a small restocking fee.
No, they wouldn't take it. They wouldn't take it back at all.
What?
They couldn't accept. There was no calling off period. They wouldn't take it back. if it was opened. Admittedly, you know, buying it from a supermarket probably isn't the best place to go and buy it, but it was.
Okay.
But it was convenient, and you get, you know, superstores in the UK do like loyalty points and stuff, so that was obviously quite a big chunk. So it's kind of like cash back in a way. But anyway, no, I'm much happy with this decision. So there we go. Look forward to reading all about it on the Digital Lifestyle over the next 12 months before we hit RTM.
Is that how long it's going to take?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott were talking on Windows Weekly, and they still reckon it's going to be RTM along the same time frame as Windows 7, which was kind of late summer, I think it was, RTM, and then available in the stores October. I'd like to think that they're going to pull a cat out of the bag and maybe get the beta out before Christmas and, you know, maybe look at getting it out for next summer. But I think that's hopeful. Though I think I said last week, Mary Jo Foley had an interesting point that she's heard a rumor, and it is just a rumor, that Microsoft might be doing discounted tablets, probably ARM tablets with Windows 8 on it in beta form, which could be quite a good way of getting devices to start selling early, because, you know, 12 months, well, let's call it 10 months, is still a massive amount of time.
Yeah, that's dangerous, though, if they take that route. I mean, they'll basically be falling back on strategies that they've tried before and pushing products out before they're actually ready.
Yeah, but
But that's been the pitfall for all this, right? That manufacturers seem to rush these products out, and that's the one thing that Apple is known for, and that's why Apple is so successful. Is that, of course, with any V1 device, you're going to have issues, but you know, Apple doesn't push out unfinished products, which is why it surprised me, by the way, when they rolled out Siri and called it a beta product.
Because
that's not something you do. That's something Google does. You know, Google has no problem throwing something out there, you know, and seeing what sticks. You know, we saw it with, you know, obviously they called that Buzz. What was that? Wave, Google Wave. So they, I mean, it wasn't until this year that they finally took the beta tag off of Gmail. So.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I was thinking why it could be a good thing is if, so long as the hardware is locked down and finished, then, you know, their issue is how they're going to test ARM in any great numbers. So if they sold an ARM tablet for, let's say, $150, and it came with Windows 8 beta on it, and you have to purchase the upgrade to the final edition, you know, you can imagine that selling like hotcakes. You know, get a tablet for $150 that's actually worth $300-$400, and all you have to do is it's got the, you know, the beta feedback turned on, and you can't turn it off, and you know. But I mean, it is just a rumor, yeah. So we shall see. So apologies for letting you all down.
Maybe
Jose could give me some of his gadget buying budget, and then I'll buy an iPad as well.
Well, you know, you asked, you know, what's under £400, and I told you the Kindle Fire.
Yeah, not available in the UK though.
So, what does that matter? Sensation XL isn't available in the US. That doesn't mean I'm not going to get a hold of it.
Yeah, I guess. I must admit, actually, I did give a lot of thought to getting a touchpad. My worry was that what its resale value might be.
You don't get a touchpad to resell it. Yeah, the touchpad is not something you get and take resale value into consideration.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I know Sheldon recommended that's what I should do, because you know it's got the potential of running Android on it, and maybe if Android had piqued my interest a bit more, that I might have taken that.
And I didn't really agree with that recommendation, because I know that this was going to be your. I mean, for Sheldon, it was perfect. For me, it was perfect, right? Because we already have primary tablets. Or like, if John were to get an Android tablet, or let's say even if he gets the Kindle Fire, it'd be good, because we already have a primary tablet device. We have something. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. you know, we have something that we're comfortable with that we use on a regular basis. In fact, I mean, John, you're on your iPad right now, right?
Yeah, I'm up in a hotel just Skyping from the iPad, which is working really well.
Yeah, so, you know, if John were to get a WebOS tablet as kind of like a secondary device to play around with, then it makes sense. But for you, this was going to be your first tablet device and your primary tablet device. And even though you've already, you know, hacked away at it and put Windows 8 on it, it's still going to be your primary. So I wouldn't be comfortable recommending something like the touchpad. However, since you were, you know, it seemed like price point was a big concern for you. That's why I said, hey, the Kindle Fire, even on import, you know, it's still going to come, you know, in way below the 400-pound budget that you had. And it was going to be, I think it's going to be, you know, a solid tablet device for a great price, and, you know, access to content is very easy. I mean, just look at Ian. You know, Ian has never let Region kept him from from the Zune marketplace and all that. So, there's ways around it.
Yeah, exactly. The biggest compromise I've made really with the Icon here is that you don't get all that extra tech that you normally that you would get with an Android or an iOS tablet, and things like, you know, GPS and things like that. But no, like I said, I've been really pleased with it so far.
Yeah. I mean, John, you know, you've had an iPad for a while, and I know you're happy with it. Have you considered any kind of supplementary tablet or maybe even making a switch to something else? Anything, any other tablet that piques your interest out there?
I'm not too sure, really. I mean, a lot of them pique my interest. I mean, I'd love to. I'm actually doing some work down here with Sheldon at the moment, so I've actually had a chance to have a play around with his touchpad and his Transformer, which is pretty cool. Definitely interested in the Transformer. I'm interested to see what the new Transformer's like. I'm after something that bridges that gap more than anything, because I'm a bit like you with the iPad. I use my iPad just for casual web surfing, a little bit of email, and then social networks like Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And that does me. I don't really use it a lot for media consumption. I mean, when I'm on the road, like I'm at the moment, I've got the UK Sky Go app, so I've got access to all my on-demand movies and TV shows, which I would get through my set-top box back home. And that kind of thing. So, you know, and I've got my music on it and things like that. So that's, you know, that's good for when I'm out and about. But that's about the only time that I'll ever use it for media consumption is when I'm not at home. More than anything, I've been kind of looking for something that bridges that gap. So I like something that's, you know, like the iPad in the tablet functionality, but also I can use for a bit of productivity so I'm on the road. So yeah, the new Transformers look pretty good, because obviously you've got the keyboard dock and everything else, so you can. It's much easier than tapping away on a touchscreen keyboard. But like Jason, I'm also really interested to see what comes with the Windows 8 tablets. But, you know, I'll wait to see what comes out next year with those. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at with regards to tablets at the moment. It's more of a gap bridger if I was going to get anything else.
Right. Yeah, and like I was saying, for some reason I keep on gravitating back towards the iPad, just because, I mean, the app experience on the iPad is just superior to anything else that's out there right now. And
totally, yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that, I was having this discussion with Sheldon earlier on, and we were saying that the thing is with iOS is so many people and so many companies are in that kind of iOS ecosystem. So with the iPad or with an iPhone or anything like that, you can pretty much guarantee that you can find an app to do whatever you want, and you can find it really easily. And that's one of the great things about it, is you don't really want to be searching about too much sort of when you're on a tablet device. So that's one of the great things it has going about it. But then on the negative side, it's like Jace's problem, where he's so invested in the Windows ecosystem that an Apple tablet doesn't quite fit in there. So it's it's kind of, you know, it's a trade-off, really, of what you're really after with a tablet. But, you know, I've had my iPad for 12 months now. I'd seriously consider upgrading it to an iPad 2 if I could get it for a reasonable price. I know I said when the iPad 2 came out, I was kind of saying that I wouldn't do that because it wasn't worth the price upgrade to do it. But, I mean, for the price that iPads still sell for, their resale value is amazing, really, because you can sell a second-hand 12-month-old one that's in good nick for nearly the same price as a brand-new one. So, you know, it makes that investment worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jason, now that I think about it, I actually have a spare iPad. I might ship it out to you to see what you think.
Well, like I say, I'll give it, because I know I've said it probably two or three times now, but it really wasn't an Apple thing, so I was really curious to try it out, you know, but there we go.
You should have gone and got it from somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly, instead of the guy from the corner.
Yeah. I remember when my Windows phone got delivered, I just couldn't wait to rip open the box and get in it and start playing with it, and I just didn't have that feeling with the iPad. Maybe probably because I've never used one, you know, but
I think that's indicative of that little bit of bias that you have.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
You know, I'm sure it didn't feel like it, you know, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
If you were able to resist it that much, there had to be a little bit of bias going on.
I remember when I bought my iPad, I didn't even wait to get it out of the Apple store. I had mine open before I even walked out the front door.
Yeah. You know, I have a buddy of mine. He was still on the iPhone 3G, and so he kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and, you know, he kept on asking me, hey, when's the next iPhone going to come out? And, you know, finally the 4S got announced. He hesitated a little too much on pulling the trigger on the iPhone 4S, so by the time he ordered it, it was the 1 to 2 week time frame rather than 1 or 2 day. But he finally got it delivered last Friday. And he got it delivered to another address, not where he lives. And so he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go pick it up tomorrow. And in my head, I'm thinking, tomorrow? I would have been there today waiting for the FedEx guy at the door. And then on top of that, so he went, he picked it up the next day. I think not even the next day. I think he waited 2 days to go pick it up. And then on top of that, he still hasn't opened it. Keep in mind, this was since this past Friday. So it's Thursday. He still hasn't opened it because he said he ordered bumpers for it, and he doesn't want to use it until he gets the bumpers.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. That's exactly what I said. I'm like, I don't know how you can do that. Just have it sit there.
Yeah, I mean, at risk of going on Jace's list, I'm actually thinking about getting a 4S for phone. So
yeah.
I think I tweeted after I'd returned the iPad that you can all relax. The temperature in hell has returned to normal.
Yeah.
Cool. Should we get on with the rest of the news? Enough talking about me. I feel like I'm under the spot.
That was the big news of the week.
You made our list this time. That's why. Our list. Bad geek. All right. Well, speaking of the tablets, go ahead and talk about iOS. And apparently Apple is confirming / admitting / agreeing that iOS 5 definitely has some battery drainage issues. I hadn't really realized it until recently that I have seen my iPad go through the battery a lot quicker than it used to on iOS 4, and definitely a lot quicker than iOS 3 too. But it looks like Apple's working on 5.0.1, which should address that battery draining issue. John, have you noticed that affect you at all?
No, it's weird, you know. I really haven't. At one point, not so long back, not long after the last upgrade, I did notice a bit of battery draining issues, and I thought, you know, I was a bit worried that it might be the battery kind of on its way out kind of thing after so much use. But no, I haven't, since upgrading to 5, I haven't really noticed any difference, to be honest.
I know Andrew was talking on the digital lifestyle, wasn't he? He was saying that his battery life had just gone through the floor. So there's clearly a problem somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, when I noticed it was, I want to say mid-week last week, I had the iPad, played boards with friends with a few people, and I'd got a notification. So I went in there, I opened up Words with Friends, and I noticed that my battery was at 4%, maybe 3% at this time, and I just kind of sat it in my lap because I watched a TV show, waited for the commercials to come on. Once the commercial came on, I went supposedly to go make a word, and it was dead. Mm. And I know it was only at 3 or 4%. I mean, 3 or 4% would still last quite a bit on iOS 4 for me. I would actually get to see it go from 4% to 3% to 2% to 1%. It wouldn't get to 4% and then off. So that's what I noticed. I thought it was weird that it went through that last 3 or 4%. Within a matter of, a minute and a half.
Oh, right. Yeah, that is strange. I mean, I noticed with mine recently that when it sort of gets to the final 10%, it tends to go a lot quicker than I notice it going when it's higher up. So you'd say 90% or something like that. But I mean, that's probably just a perception issue on my part, really, more than anything.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll get fixed, though. Something else that apparently is getting fixed is the smart cover issue, where if you have a smart cover and your iPad is locked, when you take the smart cover off, it automatically unlocks it. This is a different issue than the one that we had heard when we talked about last week with Siri unlocking your phone. So apparently it's going to address that issue as well.
Oh, cool. I hadn't heard that one.
It wasn't that Siri unlocked the phone. It just allowed you to do things without unlocking the phone.
Right.
Let's not start a scare, Jose.
But saying that, isn't Siri down at the moment as well? So Siri's
It is. Siri is down right now.
I must admit... a colleague of mine has just got an iPhone for us, and he's been showing off Siri. And actually, when it works, it is real natural language that you can use. He said something like about what's the temperature outside, and it just came back with the current temperature in the UK is 18 degrees, which we kind of laughed at. Like, what is 18 degrees everywhere in the United Kingdom? I know we're only a small island, but come on. But no, I mean, I have to say, I was quite impressed with it. Like I say, it was really natural language. You know, it wasn't kind of sticking to a script. It was real, just
Well, I mean, you guys saw that video I sent you last week, right?
I didn't get a chance to watch it, so sorry.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
I didn't do my homework, teacher.
Did you watch it, John?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, John knows what I'm talking about.
No, I'd love to try it out because I'm really interested to see how well it works. I might have to take a trip to an Apple store at some point.
Yeah. All right, moving on from web iOS to webOS. Amazing that we're actually getting some positive webOS news. Zinio actually launched a webOS version of their magazine app. So if you are a Zinio user, if you subscribe to your magazines through Zinio, and you have a touchpad, guess what? You can actually get to read your magazines on the touchpad now officially through Zinio. So that's pretty cool.
That's bizarre, though. Do you think that was a something that it must have been something they started working on before he kind of axed everything, and then they just thought, well, we started it, we may as well finish it.
I don't know. I mean, it could very well be, right? But what if the fire sale and the uproar of all these tablets and the touchpad selling out, what if that ended up compelling them? Like, hey, you know what? A bunch of people picked these up for $100. why don't we put an app out there and get some subscription money out of it?
Yeah.
Because the thing about Zinio is that it's not like it's actually a free app, right? You don't pay for the app, but what you pay for is the content. So if there's enough of these devices out there, it's worthwhile for Zinio to invest a little bit of time and money, develop the app, and then, you know, see the subscription revenue come in month over month.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be really interested to see how many subscriptions they actually get through it and see whether it paid off.
Yeah, I would love to see those stats. That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. All right, moving on to Android. One story that I picked up was that Sony Ericsson is going to be adding a swipe light keyboard to the Xperia line. And I have to say it's much needed because the keyboard, the Sony Ericsson keyboard on Android, is not good. I don't know. For me, it keeps on giving me the wrong corrections, the wrong suggestions. So maybe with this, what are they calling it? Gesture input. It'll improve. But we do know that, you know, from now on, Sony's going to be doing Android only devices. It's going to be focusing solely on smartphones and solely on Android devices. So, doesn't surprise me to see them kind of expanding, on the software there.
Yeah, definitely. I can never work well with Android keyboards, so it'd be interesting to see how well this one how much of an improvement it makes.
Yeah. Some more Android news. Looks like the Samsung Galaxy S2 Skyrocket is official.
Why?
I know we ranted a bit, you know, before we actually started recording, but these U.S. carriers need to get some new marketing folks. I don't know where they're coming from, where they come up with these ridiculous names, or why there's even a need to rebrand and rename these devices. Just call them what they are. You know, there's no need. I mean, another one of the announcements today was the HTC Resound. I don't even think of pronouncing the Z right there. It's the Resound. it is basically the HTC Sensation XL, just in black with a Verizon logo. And Resound misspelled.
Yeah, exactly. Stick that Z in for coolness or something. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, Verizon has a Z, so, you know, Resound has to have a Z too.
You should work in marketing, Jose.
So stupid.
It does seem strange that, you know, it seems to be happening all the time, doesn't it? I mean, you've talked about it many times, and I remember the HTC Titan I had was just rebranded to the T-Mobile MDA, which is just, you know, just seems a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't understand why they do. You know, there's no need to call them different devices. We've talked about this on the show before about how it just confuses the consumer.
Yep.
And we're living in a globalized world these days. You know, so all the devices are pretty much available in all countries around about all the same time. So there's just no need for it. And I don't know. So it just confuses everyone. And
you know what it reminds me of? I don't know if either of you have ever really had to go mattress shopping. But it reminds me of that experience. It reminds me of the mattress market. Because there are only a handful of main mattress makers out there, right? There's Siemens, there's Stearns & Foster, there's I think there's like four big ones. The four big ones, I forget what the other two are. but and it might be different in the UK, but I think it's actually the same pretty much across the board. They make, let's say it's a specific mattress, right? Like the one that I ended up buying was like the Elmwood by Stearns & Foster. But this exact same mattress, you go to another store, it's the exact same mattress, and they call it something else, which makes it impossible. And, you know, maybe this is what carriers are trying to do. I know that's what carriers try to do in some instances. But it's impossible to be able to compare, do comparative pricing. Right. So when you go shopping, you can't really leverage one over the other, because even though I get, you know, I went to a store and got the Stearns & Foster Elmswood in one place, at another place, it's called the Stearns & Foster Ivy. And therefore, they won't match the price. So let's say, oh, well, so-and-so, you know, they're giving me, oh, well, that's a different mattress. It's called something else. So all these mattress stores run these promotions like, oh, we will beat the price on any mattress in, you know, anywhere. Well, yeah, that's because no other store carries your freaking mattress.
Yeah.
At least not by that name.
So, yeah, I bet that's, yeah, that's, that doesn't sound exactly like what they do. I never thought about like that before, because, but yeah, it's definitely, you know, that's what they're probably doing. It's either really clever or really evil.
Yeah.
Or a little mix of the two.
Yeah. I mean, like we saw earlier this year, the Galaxy S come across all four major carriers in the U.S., but it was named something else in every single carrier. There was the – I can't even remember the names. They actually came up with four different names, even though it was the exact same device across the board. When everywhere else outside the U.S., it's just called the Galaxy S.
It's just ridiculous.
You know, so you know, somebody walks into an AT&T store and see AT&T's version of the Galaxy S called the, you know, crap phone. I can't go to T-Mobile and say, "Hey, let me see your crap phone," because at T-Mobile it's called, you know, the urine phone.
Yeah, no, it's totally, it's really true. Yeah, and it is just ridiculous, you know. I think we should start some kind of campaign to stop them doing it or something.
You need to do it. We start our own wireless carrier.
Yeah. The TDL mobile.
Yes. Yes. You can get any phone.
As long as it's a Windows phone. Sorry.
Get any phone as long as it's Windows.
Be sure you go to the right sales agent, though. If you want an iPhone, do not go to Jace.
No. And we can give them great names like crap phone and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and by the way, I don't think anybody has released this news yet, but you know, that's why Nokia hasn't released their phone in the U.S. yet. It's actually stuck in a marketing room right now. They're trying to decide what to call it.
Yeah.
And therefore, they can't release it in the U.S. yet until they come up with an amazing name for it. And rumor is that it's going to be called the Nokia Unicorn. So yeah. I'm joking, obviously, but I wouldn't doubt it if that's what's holding up the Nokia Windows phones to, you know, come out here.
Moon cheese or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With some clever play on the word light.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But you know what I found out, though, that the Sensation XL, the real version of the Resound, apparently supports the 850 band, 3G band. So I think I'm going to be picking one of these bad boys up.
Cool, yeah. They do look pretty nice. And it's a hefty phone, isn't it? I mean, what size is it, that one? It's
4.7 inches.
That's a 4.7, yeah.
Yeah. So, we'll see. All right, what else we got, guys?
I just chucked in the Motorola Atrix 2 review on Engadget. We talked about the Motorola Atrix before. It's just kind of a bit of a spec bump. Although they actually say that the material it's made of is a bit less quality, but just thought it was a few interesting things there, like the dock that comes with it that enables you kind of use it in its web top mode, is now kind of less proprietary, which means you can buy these before the Atrix had a proprietary connector and dock that would only work with that phone, whereas it's obviously kind of catching on, and I just thought it was interesting that, you know, you can now get something that's a bit more open, so that if you change your phone in the future, it'll work with any web top capable device. So I thought I'd throw it in there.
Cool. Yeah, I've always been quite interested in the Atrix. I mean, it didn't work, I don't think, I mean, from all the reviews I said, I've not actually used one properly myself, although I have had a go with the actual device. An ex-colleague of mine had one, so when I went for drinks not so long back, he showed me the Atrix phone. It's, you know, it's a really nice, kind of hefty phone, but it's pretty nice. Didn't get a chance to try it with the dock or anything, but I mean, that whole idea of being able to carry around all your data on the phone and then just slot it into a dock when you get to the office or you get home or whatever, and then just carry on working on in a full desktop kind of environment is, you know, it's really quite interesting. But, I'd say it's not really taken off yet, but it might.
No. Yeah, and I was just going to say that, you know, we talked before about the fact that when you've got a mobile phone and you've got a tablet and, you know, this device and that device, and they all need their own data plans, and, you know, but as if you could just have one device that can transform into different, you know, modes, then, you know, you can imagine a device that's got, you know, an iOS device that's capable of, you know, running full Mac OS kind of thing, that's type.
Yeah, because I mean, the idea behind the Atrix is because you've got the HDMI dock and you've got the laptop dock and stuff. So you've got it as a phone when you're out and about. You slot it into the laptop dock. You're doing some work at work. You come home, slot it in the HDMI dock, and you're watching a movie on your TV. It's like, it's that kind of like seamless thing all from one device. And although I don't think it's quite there yet, I do think it's a great idea.
Yeah, that's why I thought what's it called? The Asus Padfone. Quite interesting, because again, it's just, you know, you've got a phone, but it transforms into something else. So, you know, it kind of fits into different requirements as your needs change through the day. But, yeah. So yeah, I just thought I'd chuck it in there in case anybody was kind of interested in having a look.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So Windows Phone. I was trying to be subtle with that transition.
I can't remember who posted the show last week, but I thought it was a good show title.
That was John. That was John.
Nice one, John.
Yeah. So that's my transition to Windows Phone news. Okay. Mango rolling out to Deutsche Telekom. Never mind. Go ahead, Jason. I'm not going to say anything. Go ahead.
I'll start off by saying it. I think it's really disappointing that it's taken them 4 weeks. Mango released 4 weeks ago. You know, we shouldn't be waiting around this time. Yes, I still think Microsoft did an amazing job. They got the carriers to sign off on 98% of devices, and okay, it's not a direct comparison, but, you know, what, Ice Cream Sandwich launched 2 weeks ago, and how many devices is that available on? So,
well, that's because it hasn't launched.
Hasn't it? Oh, I apologize. I thought that was the whole thing. Oh, there you go. I let them off.
You can make that exact same point in a few months, though. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it in your back pocket.
But no, I mean, 4 weeks is too long.
It's not as really long as
Modo. Sorry?
Not as long as Modo.
No, Nodo was just a mess. We were brushing that on the carpet. Nodo never happened.
Nodo what?
Nodo never happened. We've eaten all the donuts. Let's not cover old ground. Hopefully they can get it 100% next time. But yeah, so Deutsche Telekom's finally signed off on the Mango update, and is now rolling across. I think I got it the same day as WP Central broke the news, even before the Windows blog had been updated. It's kind of nice to, I mean, I'd already got Mango because I had the beta on there, so it automatically rolled forward to the release version. But what I didn't have was drivers. So if I looked at an app in the marketplace that needed the compass, it said that your device has got a piece of hardware missing that might not mean you, that might mean you can't use all the features of this app. But which is, it's interesting that the Omnia 7 includes a compass, because it wasn't, it was an optional feature for the Gen 1 phones. And talking about optional features, the Omnia 7 included in the update was the addition of internet sharing, which is basically like personal. Sorry?
For you, it did.
Yeah, for me, it did. I'm with T-Mobile in the UK, and it just enabled it, which is great for me, having picked up the Iconia, because, again, although the Iconia's got a 3G version of it, that was, you know, a big chunk of money on top of what I could afford. So now means that I can tether the Iconia to my phone when I'm out and about and browse the internet, as should be. But it's still kind of disappointing. I know Ian Dixon was tweeting me saying that he hasn't got it on his HD7. It's interesting you haven't got it on yours, John, because yours is an Omnia 7, so that can only be orange blocking it.
I got the full update package, including the drivers and everything, sort of the day that Mango launched.
Yeah, orange signed off on that.
I don't know whether there might be another update out there yet that I need to apply to get the extra drivers for the internet tethering, because I know that's one driver that was additional, and it was up to the hardware manufacturers to sort that out. I haven't tethered my phone to my computer for a while, so I don't know. But I mean, I've not heard of anyone else on Orange who's got it yet. So
no. So although, yeah, like you say, although you could have the driver on the phone, if the carrier has chosen to disable that feature, then it won't be enabled. So, like I say, Indixon hasn't got it on his HD7, and I believe Sheldon hasn't got it on his. So, I suspect.
Where do I go to check?
You should just be in your settings. My phone's in the kitchen; it's not near me, but it should just be under settings and scroll down. You should see internet sharing.
But I mean, the major issue that I find with this is Orange, that who I'm on, and Deutsche Telekom or T-Mobile, who you're on, are actually the same company. Yeah. Now they're one and the same. They merged like, what was it, 12-18 months ago. They're the same company. I can use T-Mobile's network, you can use Orange's network, the networks are integrated. So
exactly,
one blocking it and one not blocking it. So, you know, it's the same when you were looking for the updates before. It's like, if I hop over to use T-Mobile network rather than the Orange network, which it'll do automatically, does that mean I can then have internet sharing?
it is ridiculous that the carriers have this level of involvement. And like I say, T-Mobile UK and Orange UK are supposed to be joined at the hip now, which is even more frustrating for me that I had to wait for Deutsche Telekom to authorise it before I could get it. I think it's important with the HD7, the Gen 1 devices didn't have to support internet sharing. It wasn't a prerequisite for that. It wasn't part of the fixed hardware spec. It is a Gen 2 feature. It just so happens that the Omnia 7, and I think maybe the other Samsungs, actually included the Broadcom chip that supported internet sharing, that I don't think the HD7 does. So
I'm actually going to get onto Orange about this, I think, because I'm not happy about it, because that's one thing that I really miss is internet sharing. Because like with my iPad, I'm the same, you know, the same. I didn't buy the 3G version, and I'm used to like tethering, because I mean I can tether my iPad to when I had my HD2 with Windows Mobile 6.5 on it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I know Ian said that's quite a showstopper for him. That's probably going to push him back towards the iPhone. But like I say, it wasn't a Gen 1 requirement. I know Ian kind of said he regretted not waiting for the Nokias, and I think I read today that Nokia are working on getting the internet sharing working on the Lumia 800, which doesn't currently have it, probably won't have it at launch, but it is capable of it. It's purely a driver and carrier enabled thing. But you know, we talk about on the show all the time, don't we, Jose, about how we hate how much the carriers impose these restrictions on a device that's capable of doing something, but they enforce it being switched off.
Yeah, they did the same thing with the iPhone as well, though, didn't they, with a lot of things, because they said you can have internet sharing, but you need to pay us for the privilege.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, I'm paying already for an unlimited data plan. It's up to me how I use that data plan, or I'm paying for a 500 megabyte internet plan, I'm paying for a 1 gigabyte a month data plan. It's up to me how I use that data. If I run out of data in 3 days because I've hooked my laptop up to it and downloaded loads of stuff, it's my own fault.
Yeah, exactly. So, so just a summary that the Windows Phone updates are now available to everyone. Jose should have it on his devices now if he's actually plugged his cable in. Oh, I think he actually did it during the show last week, I think.
Yeah, I didn't last too long on Windows Phone, though. for some reason, Twitter wasn't connecting through any app. I downloaded what I now learned, thanks to the powers of Jason Twitter, is Meadow, not Meadow. because I was like, I think it was you and Josh Pollard, right? Had that exchange. Yeah. I was with Josh on that one. I thought it was Meadow. So and I never knew what it was because I know at some point you were talking to the developer because he got an iPhone and he's like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen to Meadow go here on out. And so I would just see you say, you know, use the app name and I thought it was Meadow. And I was like, what the hell's Meadow? Like, what does the app do? And then I pulled it down. I was like, oh, it's a Twitter client. And then I just couldn't figure out why it was called Meadow. And then I saw, hold on. I actually favorited that tweet.
Yeah, I knew you had because I got an email.
Oh, really? I don't know if people get notified. I ain't stopped favoring tweets then. I don't know if people got notified when you favorited their tweet.
Yeah, Twitter added it as a feature not long ago.
Yeah,
okay, so
retweet as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so apparently, okay, so it's called Meadow, okay, but it's spelled really strange. It's spelled M-E-D-O-H, right?
M-E-H-D-O-H.
M-E-H-D-O-H, yeah. So the way I saw it was me and then I used to be a huge Simpsons fan, so I thought it was like, no, that was Homer's dough, you know? So I didn't get it, but I guess it's Meadow. And I mean, I actually figured, you know, out that it's pronounced Meadow before last week, but I still didn't make the connection. Like, okay, why is a Twitter client called Meadow? So this is Jace's tweet specifically explaining to Josh Pollard from, Entertainment 2.0 show over at digitalmediazone.com.
That's a great show, by the way. You should check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Why it's called Meadow. So Josh says, I can't make the connection. Jay says, seriously? Meadow, fields, trees, birds, tweeting? I made that connection immediately.
The icon helps as well because it is a picture of a meadow.
It's a picture of a tree in an empty field. That is not a meadow. It's not a meadow. One tree in an empty field does not a meadow make. So, anyways, apparently that's why it's called Meadow, because in the meadow, it's a field which has trees, and in the trees are birds, and birds tweet.
Yeah, I did actually make that an app of the week a little while ago. So I'll just give a shout out to at Mr. C Field, who is a great developer, really open to ideas and suggestions, and really good support, and you know, really open to feedback and whatnot. So definitely.
And who now uses an iPhone?
No, he cancelled his order. I bullied him and he cancelled it.
Oh, Jace! No, he needs to let people live their lives.
No, I am. He was generally unhappy, and I got him in touch with Brandon Watson over Twitter, and I think he was able to sort out some issues he was having with his developer account. So
you're mean.
No, I remember that exchange too, because. Yeah, Jason's all like, oh no, and then like he CC'd some other developer and Windows Phone folks saying, hey guys, this guy's trying to leave, and he got like three people to gang up on this poor guy.
It's like some kind of like a Windows Phone cult or something.
Yeah, seriously, and then Mr. C Field, you know, comes back, he's like, alright guys, I'll keep developing Twitter, just, you know, don't hurt my family. I think that's what he tweeted, and then yeah.
I think he did also tweet to say that we'd misconstrued what he meant. He wasn't saying that he was going to drop development. It was just that if he did switch to an iPhone, he wouldn't have a device that he could kind of test out new builds on and stuff. So
yeah, that was after you beat him to a bloody pulp. Yeah. Oh gosh, I didn't really mean it. I was kidding. That's not what I meant.
I did notice actually Ben the PC guy on Twitter, he also mentioned how he'd been trying out Meadow, and really, really liked it. So it's definitely worthwhile checking out.
Yeah. No, I've not seen it. I'll give it a...
I shall include it as another as in the show notes.
So, anyways, coming back to my point, I downloaded Meadow. I downloaded the official Twitter app. I even tried to do the integrated Twitter thing on Windows Phone, and none of them worked. It kept saying that my username and or password were incorrect. So I couldn't get it to work. I did say that I was going to plug in my Dell Venue Pro and see if, you know, I can upgrade to Mango and try it on that. But I haven't yet. But as of now, I'm still on the Xperia Arc. Not to say I didn't try, just, you know, had issues right off the bat, couldn't figure it out, and I needed my Twitter.
Yeah, no, that's a shame. I certainly don't understand why a third-party app couldn't connect.
Oops. Sorry, guys. I need to take this. This is my boss. you guys go ahead and talk without me.
Cool.
Someone's in trouble.
I've lost my train of thought.
Yeah, so I don't know why you couldn't connect then. That seems strange. I've had no problems connecting in.
Yeah.
On my apps. But yeah, I'll definitely check out Meadow.
Yeah, it's definitely worthwhile checking out. And yeah, like I said, it's interesting. I mean, I can understand why you might have had a problem with the integrated Twitter, because it goes through Microsoft servers in order to conserve battery life and make it more efficient for updating all that information. But it's obviously just not getting enough love from him, so it's decided not to work.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I've been mainly using Twitter through the People Hub. That's where I do most of it. Anyway, I've been a pretty big Birdsong fan, you know, ever since we had the Red Badger Team guys on the show way back when. I've kind of always used Birdsong, which has done everything I needed, and it's, you know, it's a pretty good app.
Yeah, no, Birdsong is still another great. I mean, really, there's three on Windows Phone, I think. Anyway, there's Meadow, Rory, and Birdsong. I think the only problem issue with Birdsong is that they're a small software house, and they've been really struggling with trying to grow the company. So Birdsong's had a bit of neglect, but I know they brought some interns on board, and they're hoping to get back to it. I know they released a Mango version of Birdsong, and they're hoping to get some more features in there soon. So
yeah, totally. It's pretty good. And I've got an Apple membership now, so I'm just going to finish off doing my apps, and maybe we can do my app as an app of the week soon.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, cool. The TDR mobile podcasting app.
That's what I'm working on.
Cool. So yeah, we're running long, so The next item I had was the fact that Nokia Maps is going to be available for all Windows phones. It won't be to the same degree as on the Nokia devices, which will include turn-by-turn navigation and all those nice things. But it does mean that that people will be able to use the very high quality Nokia Maps on any Windows phone device. And this kind of comes back for me to what I always said, that Nokia isn't necessarily just about the devices. It's about all the services, the ecosystem that they've got, because Windows Phone's biggest Achilles heel is the fact that some of its services aren't available in every region where the phones are. I know we've suffered in the UK to start off with, when, you know, we couldn't have, some of the features in Nodo didn't work in the UK. Like some of the searching and some of the local searches just didn't work. So, you know, really Nokia is all about that. You know, they've got the music service, which many people have kind of said, why? We don't understand it, because Windows Phone's got Zune, but Zune isn't available in all regions. And what Nokia Music's going to be is, one, it's going to be available everywhere. It's going to be completely free, but also the music will be tailored to the region. So I think it's just another case in point about what Nokia is really bringing to the table.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, it's not a biggie. I mean, the turn-by-turn navigation will be. Do you know if the Nokia Maps is going to be free to everyone, even if they're not on a Nokia?
I believe it. Yeah, it's looking on WP Central, which we're including the show notes. Yeah, it's free, and it's also not just about the maps. It's also about the sheer volume of points of interest that they've got, and the fact that they're kind of detailed satellite 2D and 3D views.
When I was using, I was in the car with somebody the other day, and I was a passenger in the car. They didn't have sat nav, and I was using Bing Maps, and that got us to the place really easily. So I don't know how much more Nokia Maps will bring on top of that, but yeah, I'm definitely eager to give it a go and give it a try out. It's a shame that they won't bring the navigation services to that, because that's what Windows Phone really needs. It desperately needs some kind of free navigation software that's good, because that's what Android's really got. It's got the benefit of having the Google Maps integration with navigation, which is completely free and a really good navigation service.
Yeah, I think in some ways for Nokia it's about not giving away too much, because at the end of the day they still need people to buy their phones.
They do indeed.
So I think it's about tempting people to the platform, but also giving them still that little bit of an edge. One thing we haven't got any specific notes in, but at the moment you just cannot move for Nokia advertising. They've taken over.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Airports. They've got a massive dome, I think it is, near the Olympics stadium, and they're just absolutely everywhere. They're in papers, they're on the telly. You just cannot avoid it. So I think it's certainly already starting to make a difference. I think, like I said last week, it's certainly not going to be a case that people don't know about Windows Phone anymore. It's going to be that they're still choosing the alternative, but.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think the latest one that we saw was that they've actually plastered Heathrow, haven't they?
Yeah, it is literally everywhere. I included in my Windows Phone roundup this week that it's all over the Channel 5 website. It's just everywhere.
I think all over Sky now as well, isn't it? I said pretty much every single Sky ad break, they've got Windows Phone adverts in there as well.
Yeah, I still think for me the device is too small. I still want to see something bigger, and I still think it's a big disappointment that it hasn't got a front-facing camera, which I think probably for majority of consumers won't be a big deal. Mm. But I just think it's a shame that most people getting this phone are going to be tied into a 2-year contract.
We were talking about this today and saying that if you're going to get tied into a 2-year contract, the Lumia 800 is probably not the phone that you would go for, because it doesn't really offer anything over the Gen 1 Windows phones that have been out for X amount of time anyway. But it is a beautiful, beautiful phone.
Mm. It certainly does offer, like I say, all the Nokia Music and Nokia Drive. We've got the Nokia social app on our phones, thanks to that link, where you can download it from the marketplace. And it was quite fun to play with. I'm not sure necessarily it would.
Enough to bring people off other platforms.
No.
Will get this phone and invest in it for the next 24 months.
Yeah, I did think, though, that social app, what I liked about it was kind of like a private social app.
Most of
Foursquare and most of the other check-in services are all about just sharing it with the world, and I'm sure you can set privacy settings, but it seems like with this it's kind of out the box that you invite people into groups, and it's almost like the Google Plus Circle sort of thing.
I'm still not convinced of how useful it's going to be.
No,
I mean, the whole point of doing things like Foursquare is you get something out of it. It's like, if you become the mayor of Starbucks, you get a free coffee when you go into Starbucks.
Yeah.
And there's that X amount, you go to check into pubs and you can see there's, 20 specials near you and things like that. That's the whole beauty of Foursquare. It's not just the game. It's the fact that you actually get something out of doing, playing the game as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I've got a guy that I work with. He's got a Nokia N8, and he was going to take a look at one thing that Nokia have done is released for the N8, and I think some of the other Symbian devices is you can actually download a Windows Phone simulator.
Oh, right.
Which is a great way, I think, of getting people that have got a Nokia phone that aren't that's kind of seen the adverts, a little bit interested, actually get them to you know, download a simulator and actually have a kind of, not necessarily an in-depth, but at least get a feel for how the IRS works. So
that is a really good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. I think we've lost Jose. I think he's got work commitments, so he's just included some a link to Engadget, which details about the names and whatnot. It's just,
one of the hazards of our recording, because although we're recording in the evening over here in the UK, it's slap bang in the middle of Jose's day, so.
Yeah, and the last thing I had was just a light-hearted thing, really, that there was a story on Reg, on the Register Hardware, about some people have proved that people, one of the things that my wife always says is like, great, I can take my Kindle on holiday with me, I can take 1,000 books and, you know, I don't need to find any more space. But someone's proven that with each book you add, the Kindle actually gets heavier.
What?
Apparently, I'll read it. Apparently, energy is bound in the process of storing the book's bits in the reader's flash memory, and according to Einstein's most famous equation, that E equals MC squared, humanity's, this means that the gadget gains an equivalent amount of mass. So just be careful next time if you go on a holiday and you've got your Kindle with stack full of books, make sure it doesn't take you over your weight limit.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit of a light-hearted story. I did laugh when I saw it.
I knew, so it wouldn't take long for someone to prove something like that, would it?
No, exactly.
Sometimes, hey guys, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay.
That's okay. Jose, we were just explaining that you've been tied up with work, so we were just kind of wrapping up.
Yeah. So, wait, so what's the story about the Kindle getting heavier?
Oh yeah, we were just talking about that. It's basically some scientists reckon that due to Einstein's theory that as you when you store a book on the Kindle, it's the way it's storing, it uses energy, and that energy adds weight. So I was just saying that my wife always says it's great with her Kindle, she can take 1,000 books with her if she wants to, but now she'll be carrying a bit of extra weight around. So sorry you missed all the Nokia chat. It was.
That's right. I'm sure you covered it just fine, Jace.
John, I couldn't get a word in edgeways. John was just talking and talking and.
Oh, I bet. But yeah, John never shuts up about Windows Phone. As he records on his iPad.
Yes.
I do have a Windows Phone next to me as well before Jace texted Mark.
Yeah. I think I did tweet John the other day because I saw it on when I was reading one of his tweets, it said from Twitter on my on iPhone. I went, get off your iPhone.
Oh, I saw that. Okay. I did see that.
So, cool.
Yeah, man, you guys got me looking at phones now. I haven't bought a phone so long now. I'm itching to buy one.
You've got to get the Lumia. You've got to get the Lumia 800, get bored of it, and then send it to me.
I was looking at the Xperia Pro with US 3G, $400.
Oh, yeah.
It's not bad.
One thing we did just talk about, sorry, we're getting back into it, but we were just saying about how much of a difference the fact that the Nokia Lumia 800 doesn't have a front-facing camera. Is that something that you would think would be a big deal, or I guess most consumers...
I mean, is that a big deal? I don't know. For me, it's not. But then again, for me, I don't even think it'd be a big deal if it didn't have a rear-facing camera, to be honest.
The only thing I thought was, for most people, it probably wouldn't be bothered. They wouldn't be bothered. But I just think technology moves so fast, and this phone on a normal contract's got to last you 2 years. And with Skype coming, I just wonder whether or not.
I don't know. Like I have my best friend. He's had an iPhone for quite some time now, ever since the 3G, and he's stuck with the iPhone. He hasn't really had any interest in any other device. And he's quite a tech head. But he never really, you know, with the iPhone 4S, or iPhone 4, there was FaceTime. And he never uses it. And, you know, his girlfriend has an iPhone 4, so that, I mean, you would figure that'd be the perfect person to FaceTime with, but he never uses it. I know a couple people that have phones that happen to have front-facing cameras, and they really don't use them. I've never used them. I barely even use the regular camera. I mean, I know it surprises me when I see how much people use their camera phone, because I just can't. I just think about my usual day, and I can never think of anything so interesting that I'm compelled to take a picture of it.
I must admit, I mean, I use my camera, my phone, more than we use our old Nikon camera. But I just think that, I mean, I'm the same. I've had phones in the past that have had a front-facing camera and just never, ever used them. But I just, for me, the reason why I kind of hesitate is the fact that Microsoft just purchased Skype, and I just wonder if that could potentially bring it, you know, kind of make it a necessary feature. But
why would it be necessary? I mean, do you really see yourself video chatting with somebody on your phone? I mean, we're on Skype right now and we're not video chatting.
True.
Right?
Yeah, no.
I mean, it seems like one of those features that, you know, okay, it's there, but it just wouldn't really be used. It's more the novelty of having that feature in service rather than the actual usefulness of it.
Yeah, I definitely think it's more of a kind of, for me anyway, it's more of like a psychological thing with the fact that the Lumia 800 doesn't offer anything over the Gen 1 Windows phones, and it's supposed to be a so-called, in quotes, Gen 2 Windows phone.
Supposed to be the first real Windows phone.
It goes back to last week's show, right? When Sheldon was you know, itching for his Gorilla Glass.
Yeah.
He was like, well, do you really need it? He was like, well, I want it because it's there. Just like I want a dual core processor. I don't care if it doesn't need it. I want it.
Because all the other latest phones on the market have got, so I want it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care if it's turned off and I don't know about it. I want it to say dual core.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm certainly going to contact my account. I mean, I'm only 12 minutes into my contract, it's unlikely, but I'm certainly going to see if I can get any kind of leeway in getting hold of a Lumia 800, offering to terminate my contract or something. But for me, it's not a device I would pay for because it's not big enough.
How much is the Lumia going for off contract over there?
It's 400, I think. We had it in last week's. I can see the link in last week's show notes.
So that's going to be, what, a good 550 in the US, 600 by the time I import it.
It was 420 euros, and I found Clove Technology doing it for 369, excluding VAT, but 442 with.
That's kind of rough for me, especially, you know, I'm looking at this Sony Ericsson Xperia Pro, which has US 3G. So does Lumia, right? Lumia's Pentaband. But I'm looking at this for $400 versus 600, and the 600 I'm probably going to want to use on, like, the Nexus. What's it called? The Galaxy Nexus? God, they butchered. Stop butchering names! The Galaxy Nexus.
There's a show title right there.
Yeah. But, you know, the Galaxy Nexus or what's the other phone, or the Razer, you know, I'm probably going to spend money on one of those two. And I don't know. I mean, the Lumia is a nice device, but I would much rather just get an N9 than get the Lumia.
Yeah, I was watching videos of the N9, and Mego looked really interesting. It's just just a shame that, well, not for me, it's not a shame, but that it looked like it had potential.
Yeah.
It had some nice gesture controls and everything. So, and we also, while you were busy, we were chatting about that Nokia have released a Windows Phone simulator for, like, the N8s and whatnot for people to actually give Windows Phone a go.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I'm looking right now. The Nokia N9 imported is $700, so I'm guessing the Lumia is going to be around that price range. And I'd much rather spend that on the Galaxy Nexus, you know, to try out Ice Cream Sandwich rather than try out an OS that I already have two devices on. Or on two devices, I should say. Because, I mean, that's the thing, right? If the Lumia had this slick new version, or not even, it's still Mango, but maybe like a skinned version, or again, something unique to it that didn't exist on another device, maybe I'd be more compelled to grab it, but I don't know. If I have to choose, I think I'd rather go with the N9 with Mego than Windows Phone on the Lumia.
I think for me, other than the fact that the device is too small, if I was looking at buying a Windows Phone, I would really gravitate towards it because of all the extra features that Nokia had that you just can't get elsewhere. Particularly if you're in John and I were talking about, particularly if you're in an area where all the Windows Phone services aren't available, like Zune and Xbox, and you know, having all the free music and all that, and the turn by turn, it's definitely enough, I think, to pull you across some of the other devices if you're looking at Windows Phone solely.
I don't know if I agree with that, because even without, let's say you do take out Zune and Xbox out of the equation. And Bing Maps, I think there's enough third-party solutions out there that would make it worthwhile still. Right? So, I mean, there's at this point, the music streaming service area is actually starting to get a little crowded. Right? All of a sudden, you have tons of services to choose from. You know, it used to be just Pandora was the classic one, but Pandora, Spotify, is Ardio available in the UK?
Not sure. I've not heard of it.
Ardio, Mog, and I'm sure you guys have other services, competing services over in the UK as well to Spotify. But I mean, surely those would fill in that gap. Turn by turn, I can see that, just because Nokia's turn by turn service is definitely better than, you know, having. But even the turn by turn on the Lumia isn't integrated, right? It's still an app.
Yeah,
it's not integrated. So see, it's still. I mean, you could still pick up another device, you know, that has a front facing camera, and then just you know, get an app for it. At this point, I don't see enough to pull you towards the N9.
Well, I think
if the hardware itself doesn't pull you towards it.
No, I think in some ways though that Nokia Maps, what it offers is that kind of 70,000 points of interest and things like that aren't necessarily available in those third-party apps. One of the things that Nokia is renowned for is its quality of map and information and everything else. But no,
again, I mean, how often do you actually use that? Do you actually go, at the corner of, you know, A Street and First Street, what are the points of interest around me? I mean, you know, it's not usually the first resource you go to when you try to, you know, find points of interest.
Yeah.
If I had to buy any Windows Phone now, I think I'd go for the Titan. That's my personal choice.
Yeah. I'm pulling up the specs right now. I can't remember. Here we go.
I mean, the Titan is definitely a really nice device. And
ooh, US 3G. Maybe I can pick it up.
I think, I mean, that's probably the way that I would lean, but I would really like to have a Nokia device. I'm just hoping that early next year, or maybe, you know, when Windows Phone 8 starts coming around, that they've got a much bigger device. I just couldn't go back to a 3.7-inch screen.
But see, but that's the thing, though, right? You're saying you really want to get a Nokia device, but what is it about it that you want to get, though? It sounds like it's more the novelty or the idea of having this Nokia device than it is the actual features that attract.
I mean, it's definitely a bit of romanticism, because all my phones have always been Nokia until I got given a Windows Mobile device. I'd always had Nokias, and at first I really hated the wrench. I mean, obviously Windows Mobile is really awful. It wouldn't matter what phone you had, you'd feel the pain. But no, I mean, I just kind of really miss having a Nokia device. There's just something about it. But yeah, I mean, you're probably right. There probably isn't much logic in there. Plus, I'd like to try out their services and everything, just to see, you know, see what they've actually got on offer.
Yeah. I mean, I know you mentioned already that you can't go back to a smaller screen. And I'm taking a look at my my HD7 right now. And I mean, the HD7, it's definitely nice. It has that larger screen, but I think it's executed well, right? So it's still pretty thin. I'm looking at it right now. It's barely a little thicker than the Xperia Arc. And the Xperia Arc is a pretty thin device, especially because it has that, you know, kind of concave back. The Xperia Arc is actually a little taller, and it's width-wise, they're about the same. So I think the HD7 executed it right, so you have that larger screen real estate, but still in you know, a very comfortable and usual chassis. What I'm worried about these, when I look at these 4.5-inch, 4.7-inch devices, I feel like then they get a little uncomfortable, right? So unless it's like the HD2, the HD7, or the Desire HD, where it's this nice, thin, compact chassis, and it just takes advantage of that, you know, larger front real estate. I don't know if I would. I mean, I definitely don't mind the smaller screen on the Xperia Arc. The Xperia Arc is a 3.7, I think.
I mean, I definitely felt it having gone from the HD2 down to the Omnia 7. That I think for me, 4 to 4.3 inches is the sweet spot for me. And it's interesting you talk about HD7, because that's the phone I wanted, and that's the phone I would have if it wasn't for the fact that on my carrier the only one available is the Omnia 7, and kind of ironically now it means I've got internet sharing, which I wouldn't have actually got the phone I wanted. So, but no, for me, when the phone started getting announced, it was the HD7 I'd kind of set my heart on, but no, I ended up with the Omnia, and I definitely feel that drop in screen size, but it's for me on the Omnia 7, it's made up for the fact that it's got the AMO LED screen.
Yeah, all phones should have that.
By the way, that's another stupid naming convention that happened. The sevens across the line on all Windows Phone devices. You have the Omni 7, the HD 7, there was the Surround 7. What was the Samsung one?
That was the Omni 7.
Okay, yeah. So what was the LG one?
It was the something 7, wasn't it?
Optimus 7?
Optimus 7, yeah, something like
that. Yeah, Optimus 7. It's like, come on, really?
Yeah, well, I've said before, I think the whole naming convention of Windows Phone is just wrong anyway, but...
Yeah, anyway. In this economy, you would think, you know, I wonder why it is that these people still have jobs and not the other ones.
Yeah. Cool. I'm conscious of the fact we're running quite long, so.
All right. Well, I think that about does it anyway, so we can wrap it up. How long have we been going? 2 hours? Something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. How long was it before it cut out?
Jeez, I don't know. All right. Oh, yeah, by the way, in case the listeners are wondering where Sheldon is, he dropped out about 3-4 minutes into the conversation. He had connection issues, then he had to take off, so...
He wasn't feeling too well
either. Yeah.
The rumors that he stopped using Windows Phone and went back to his iPhone are completely unfounded. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. But, you know what? I think we did pretty good for an off-news week.
Yeah.
I think Jscape gave us enough material to cover.
Just jumping back, I've been quite pleased. I think I would estimate I've probably got about 5 hours out of the Oconia. It's just it died on me while we were recording, but anyway, that's still installing software and tweaking it and playing around with it.
It'll last for days.
Yeah, no,
With 5.01, right? Not right now.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to make that comparison. I was just saying for a Windows tablet, you know, I know how long my netbook used to last. That's not too bad going.
How long did you say? 5 hours?
I reckon about that, yeah. And like I said, that's with me installing software and playing around with it, probably. So not what I would class normal use. So I think they're quite up to about 6 hours, six and a half hours, just browsing the web and whatnot, and about three or four hours if you're watching HD video.
See, I don't know if I like that. I mean, my Vio TT gets about 5 hours of battery life.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's certainly no
Well, it's early, right? We can't make judgments right
now. No. Well, I mean, bear in mind, when Windows 8 really comes out, there will be ARM versions, and they will be multi... Well, I expect there to be multi-day, much more iPad-like devices.
Yeah.
And also, Intel have said that they're going to have much more energy efficient... Because I think also with Windows 8, the ARM versions will be much more appliance-like, like the iPad, that it would just be flick it on and like a mobile phone.
You know, speaking of... I don't know what word you mentioned, but something triggered me to think about this right now. Speaking of one of the words that you mentioned, did you guys check out the Asus ZenBook review that Joanna Stern did on The Verge?
No.
It is... So I've always had a thing for these really smaller size laptops, right? Even before the netbooks. I mentioned my Vio TT, right? So the Vio TT was an 11.1-inch... laptop, you know, it had a Core 2 dual processor in it. Beautiful laptop. I'm actually going to use it on this trip that I'm going on. Well, I'm letting my buddy borrow it. But great little laptop. Before that, I had the Lenovo U110, also 11.1 inches, very small Core 2 Duo processor, you know, powerful but still compact. And then comes along netbooks, which ruined it for me because that made these ultra-portables kind of go by the wayside because my TT, my Vio TT, was close to $3,000. And then, you know, in comes the netbook for, you know, a few hundred bucks. But then in comes Apple with the MacBook Air, and now here come the ultrabooks, right? So the Asus ZenBook is Asus's latest ultrabook. And it is beautiful. I almost bought one two nights ago after I read the review on the spot. So I'm taking a flight tonight to Boston. I almost bought it just to take it on the flight tonight with me. Really nice 11.6 inch screen. There's Core i3, 5, and 7 configurations. 128 gig SSD. It's at its thinnest point. It's the exact same measurement as a MacBook Air. At its thickest, it depends on whether you get the 11 or 13 inch. But the 11 inch is actually a little bit thinner. Great little device and really competitive. The Core i7, the top of the line 11 inch model, is $1,200, which is competitive with the Air.
Oh, wicked. I'm really interested in this actually because I mean, like what I was saying before about how I'm looking for kind of an intermediary between, for when I'm on the road, basically, for when I'm going around visiting clients and everything else, that's really cool.
Yeah, and speaking of battery life, I think the battery drain test lasted close to, you know, over five, close to 6 hours.
Wow.
Cool. And really compact, really lightweight, so.
I'll definitely check that out.
Yep. I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold out. I think I might, at some point between now and Christmas, I'm probably going to pull the trigger on one of these.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a really good a good option because I must say I was looking at the MacBook Airs.
Yeah, I was too, just because that 11 inch is so nice. But now that I've seen this one, I mean, I'm not even going to bother with OS X.
No.
All right, well let's wrap it up because yeah, we are going extremely long.
I think there's one more thing we should really say, and that's that no one has won our competition yet.
I would hardly call it a competition.
We're going to let it run for one more week, and if no one wins, I'm taking it.
There we go.
Yeah, John emailed into the show just to test that the system was working. So, hey.
Yeah.
So if you got to the end of our bumper three-hour show, you've done really well.
You know what we should try, actually, is that... Look, I might do this. Out of my own pocket, I might go out and buy a phone, unlock device, and do a giveaway maybe around Christmas time and see if people actually, you know, either tweet or email the show or if we start getting some type of activity in the comment section. I wonder if a free phone would do it.
Then we know that we're not getting any listeners.
I know, right? I'll get like an unlocked iPhone or a Sensation XL or maybe a Galaxy Nexus or something like that.
I think I think maybe if we can get to a regular time slot and get the live feed going, we might hopefully get a bit more interaction.
Well, the last three or four shows, we've actually been pretty good at. We've been pretty steady recording on Thursdays, at least on Fridays. So, anyways, guys, email in, get that copy of DVB Logic.
You don't even have to do anything really interesting. You just have to send us an interesting email.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, DVB Link, DVB Logic's DVB Link product, I mean, I use it, and it really is great. If you've got mobile devices or tablets, you know, they've got clients for Android, for iOS, for Windows Phone. You know, you can literally watch TV wherever you are. So, you know, and I found that having that sitting between between the tuners at Media Center has made Media Center a whole load more reliable. You don't just suddenly get extra channels suddenly appearing. It literally, Media Center sees what you reveal to it through DVB Link. And it's, you know, and like I say, it supports streaming, you know, it supports DLNA streaming. It's, you know, it really is an excellent product.
Well worth winning.
Absolutely.
All right. With that, now we're going to wrap up the show.
Oh, Harry Potter demo. Sorry. Sorry, I just saw a tweet from Major Nelson saying the Harry Potter Years 5 to 7 demo is available, which my kids have been screaming for.
These random interruptions. Children drops so, out.
Hour 5 on TDL Mobile Show 93.
My boss calls me in the middle of the show. Harry Potter demos. Last minute Excellent. Story editions. All right, let's call it a wrap. You can email us at mobile@thedigitallifestyle.com, so you can go ahead and get yourself that copy of DVB Link. You can also tweet us, follow at TDL Mobile. That's where we let you know when the shows are being published. You can tweet us or follow us individually. I am at Jose Ortiz.
I'm at John Dickinson.
I'm at Database Chase.
Sheldon is at Sheldon W, and Ian is at IS Dixon. And I think that's going to be show 93. So I guess I'll talk to you guys next week, huh?
Yeah, yep. Cheers, guys. Really enjoyed that one.
All right, guys. See ya.
Bye.